Caspar David Friedrich. It seems strange now, but for a while the art world turned its back on the German painter Caspar David Friedrich. His art didn't look like that of the famous artists from France who were being heralded as the fathers of modern art, the Impressionists. Their work was brushy, capturing the impression of a moment, and they ran riot with color. Friedrich's work, in comparison, was considered too meticulous, too precise, too finely detailed to warrant serious critical attention in the decades that followed. But in reality, while the Impressionists' fame had an impact on the popularity of Friedrich's work in the mid-20th century, it is most likely that being labeled the ideological harbinger of Nazi philosophy is the thing that created a dramatic depopularization of his work. He had the misfortune, in the early 1930s and 1940s, to have his art appropriated by the Third Reich and Hitler's regime, and to be declared as one of Hitler's favorite artists. What this does to the popularity of an artist's work even after the death of the artist, well, it's something akin to taking a rock and dropping it off a cliff. After the first few decades, the tide of opinion had turned. After Friedrich was thrust back into the historical limelight by a fanciful book published in the 1970s that traced the lineage of art influence from the Romantics to the New York Abstract Expressionists. Now, it's generally accepted that both in his technical brilliance and theoretically in his views of what the purpose of art should be, Friedrich was as radical as they come. But if proof was ever needed again of his credentials as one of the great forerunners of modern art, then The Monk by the Sea would have to be it. Exhibited in the Academy in Berlin in 1810 along with its companion piece, Abbey in the Oak Forest, it depicts a monk standing on the shore looking out to sea. The location has been identified as Rügen, an island off the northeast coast of Germany, a site that he frequently painted. The monk is positioned a little over the third of the way into the painting from the left, to a ratio of about 1 to 1.6. This same ratio can be found in Western art and is variously known as the golden ratio, the golden rule, or section. Aside from this, there is little else about the painting that can be described as conventional. The horizon line is unusually low and stretches uninterrupted from one end of the canvas to the other. The dark blue sea is flecked with white, suggesting the threat of a storm. Above it, in that turbulent middle section, blue-gray clouds gather, giving way to the highest part in a calmer, clearer blue. The transition from one to the other is achieved subtly through a technique called scumbling, in which one color is applied in thin layers on top of another to create an ill-defined hazy effect. The composition could not be further from typical German landscape painting of the time. These generally followed the principles of a style imported from England known as the picturesque, which tended to employ well-established perspectival techniques designed to draw the viewer into the picture. Devices such as trees situated in the foreground or rivers winding their course snake-like into the distance. Friedrich, however, deliberately shunned these tricks. Such willful, unconventional decisions in a painting of this size provoke consternation among contemporary viewers. As his friend Heinrich von Kleist famously wrote, "Since it has, in its uniformity and boundlessness, no foreground but the frame, it is as if one's eyelids had been cut off." There is some debate as to who the strange figure, curved like a question mark, actually is. Some think it's Friedrich himself, others the poet and theologian Gotthard Lugud Kosgarten, who served as a pastor on Rügen and was known to give sermons on the shore. Kosgarten's writing certainly influenced the painting. Von Kleist, for example, refers to it as Kosgarten effect. According to this pastor-poet, like the Bible, nature is a book which God reveals himself. Similarly, stripping it of any literal Christian symbolism, Friedrich instead concentrates on the power of the natural climate and so charges the landscape with divine authority, one who seems to all but subsume the figure of the monk. With nothing but land, sea, and sky to measure him, his physical presence is rendered fragile and hauntingly ambiguous. Originally, the figure looked to the right, his feet still point in that direction. Friedrich altered this at some point, having him look out to sea. The technique of positioning a figure with their back towards the viewer is often found in Friedrich's art. The German word for it is Rückenfigur. Monk by the Sea, the first instance of this in his work, is somewhat atypical in that the monk being so small and situated so low on the horizon doesn't oversee the landscape the way Friedrich's Rückenfigur generally do, like in his Wanderer Above the Sea of Fog. The Rückenfigur technique is much more complex and intellectually challenging than those found in the picturesque. Acting as a visual clue, the figure draws us into the painting, prompting us, challenging us even, to follow its example and simply look. And so we do. Yet, its presence also obscures our line of vision, and rather than enhancing the view, it ends up disrupting it. In this sense, the Rückenfigur, while reminding us of the infinite beauty of the world, also points to our inability to experience it fully, a contradiction that we often see expressed in German Romantic art and literature. Napoleon's army was occupying Prussia when the painting was completed, and art historians have naturally looked to read the painting and its companion, which depicts a funeral procession in a ruined abbey, as a comment on the French occupation. would have been dangerous to be openly critical of Napoleon's forces, so the painting's political messages are subtly coded. Both paintings, Monk by the Sea and Abbey in the Oak Wood, were purchased by the young Crown Prince, Frederick William, whose mother, Queen Louise, had died a few months earlier at the age of 34. An extremely popular figure, she had pleaded with Napoleon after his victory to treat the Prussian people fairly. Her death surely would have been fresh in the people's minds as they saw the paintings, a tragic loss which was very much associated with the country's own defeat to the French. The presence of death is certainly felt in Monk by the Sea. Though, in the monk's resolute figure, we also find a source of spiritual strength, defiance even, standing like that Gothic abbey and those German oaks in that partner piece, as much a symbol of the resolve of a nation against a foreign military rule as the individual faced with his mortality. Like the British painter John Constable, Frederick drew on the natural world around him, often returning to the same area again and again. Unlike the English painter's more scientific or naturalistic approach, though, Frederick condensed the image so as to communicate an exact emotion. As he put it, a painter should not paint only what he sees before him, but also what he sees within himself. It is this inward-reaching project, rather using color and form to reveal emotional truths, that singles him out as one of the greatest and most innovative painters of his age. A true romantic.